Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday and a good Memorial Day weekend, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. And really a great, always a great four-day weekend when we kick off the summer. And perfect feeling like we're going to have, other than maybe a little rain tomorrow on the East Coast, should be a terrific Memorial Day sequence. There is just a lot to absorb, and we don't even have all the Monday cards drawn yet. A lot of them, including Belmont and Santa Anita. Santa Anita, by the way, and we'll talk to Brad Free in hour three. Free bat, Brad Free. And as free as the wind blows, as free as the grass grows, because you're Brad Free. And he'll join us. It makes me laugh every time. The Santa Anita weekend is big. You got, assuming that unlike yesterday at Pimlico, hi-ho, somebody hi-hoed the jackpot for $400,000, and they'll try to carry it to Monday at Santa Anita, and then they'll force it out on Monday, which is really going to be should be a good card. And in fact, we're going to touch on it in a couple of different manners, because Jim Gluckson, I had to get Jim. There's been a parade of Breeders' Cup news all week, and so I reached out to Jimmy, and he's going to tell you about a new initiative, which is very clever. And you know, in addition this week to announcing the Win and You're In schedule, 80 something races that actually some have already taken place, of course, internationally. And there's one this weekend, in addition to the Shoemaker Mile, which gets the domestic action going. But Jimmy will detail this new Dirt Dozen idea. Dora Delgado and the team. And this makes a lot of sense. Given what happened last year, and not just last year, in recent years with some smallish fields in certain races. I mean, the Juvenile Fillies have been short. The Sprint, Filly and Mare Sprint, you know, fluctuates. But they're going to offer credits. It's a credit plan, essentially. And beyond, you know, there's the Win and You're In races, but then there's the set of 12 dirt races where you can earn credits toward the entry fees. It's not so much a Win and You're In as it is a bonus program. Call it a frequent runner program. And they're focusing on the dirt. That's what they want to really reinforce. And the Sprint, the Juvenile Fillies, the Dirt Mile, certainly, and the Distaff. There isn't a race designated for the Classic for this dirt program. But two for the Dirt Mile, two for the Distaff, two for the Filly and Mare Sprint, including Derby City Distaff on Derby Day. And obligatory. 30,000 for first, 15,000 for second, 7,500 for third. And it's based a little bit on the purse money. If it's a $2 million purse race versus a $1 million purse race in Breeders' Cup, then it's a little bit less, $15,000, $7,500, and $37.50. But this is a good idea. And, you know, you look at last year, Juvenile Phillies had 6. The Juvenile Boys had 11. The Philly Mare Sprint had just that 5-pack, CC. Dirt Mile had 8. The Straight Sprint had 9. The Distaff 11. The Classic 8. So those dirt races, even if you exclude the Classic, averaged 8 runners. Not so great. I mean, particularly the Philly Mare Sprint with 5 and the Juvenile Philly with 6. You can live with, you know, 8 or 9 is at least, you know, that's workable, and the Try and Super, you know, there's things that can happen. And as it happens, when you look at the prices, I thought that was interesting. I jotted this down. I went and looked. Echo Zulu was 4-5 in that 6-horse field. CC was 6-1, actually, in the 5-horse field. So that was a palatable price. Aloha West, of course, was 11-1 in the 9-horse field. The other short price was Life is Good, who was 70 cents on the dollar. And Nick's Go actually was 3-1, clobbering the Classic. Marche Lorraine was 50-1, of course, in the Distaff. The shocker de tutti shockers. Corniche was 3-2 in the Juvenile. So this is a way to try to boost the fields. Jimmy will give us all the details. NBC also, I think Wednesday, announced the television. So I thought, you know what, let me get Jimmy in here. I haven't talked to Jimmy in too long. I don't barely saw Jim at Derby. 2 seconds. Here, I'll go ahead and give you a quick rundown on the lineup. Chris Hyde is going to visit here in about 5 minutes. Very short. I just wanted Chris to tell you what went on in the subcommittee meeting yesterday. Seemingly went well, the good first step, and he'll tell you what the next step. We're gonna take the pulse on a checkpoint by checkpoint basis, pushing this SAFE Act, and try to keep the momentum and the awareness at a high level. So Chris Hyde's going to join us. Scott Shapiro, early. We'll get Shap's look at the weekend, and you got tomorrow at Churchill. You got that overnight, another one of the overnights, the Kirtana, big field, and part of the cross country pick 5 is terrific. Nick Tamaro at 11. We'll go through it with Nick. You got the Soaring Softly in New York. There's a high percentage, but it doesn't necessarily, high percentage chance of rain, but it doesn't necessarily look like a lot of rain. So we'll see. Ideally, we've had a spate of off the turf action. Churchill yesterday, Indiana yesterday. So, you know, Canterbury on Wednesday. I got to mention Canterbury in a second. So Nick will go over the cross country. But in addition to the Kirtana on Saturday, no stakes Sunday, Monday at Churchill, the winning colors. So we'll get Churchill went ahead and had a. Did they have a double draw yesterday? I think they did, to get the Sunday and Monday cards done. So Shap. And then Hammer, we'll check in with Rick. He's up bright and early, and so we'll get Rick in, because Jimmy Gluckson in hour two, as well as Scully. We'll get James Scully's plays this weekend, and I want to get Dallas Baker in here. And speaking of updates, we've got, five cards so far run at Monmouth. And I don't know if you saw the piece yesterday in Blood Horse, but if you didn't, we'll let Dallas kind of walk you through these first 5 days and get a feel for how the fixed odds, I don't want to call it an experiment because that makes it sound like, you know, it could fail. could it fail or could it not live up to hopes and aspirations? Sure. But ideally it does work and it does add to horse players' options. And the initial reaction and the first, you know, glances and anecdotes or, you know, incidents of price opportunities, it seems like at first blush, if you're a player that gravitates toward favorites, the fixed odds is going to put more money in your pocket. And that's just early on. I've gotten three emails. My buddy Randall in Jersey got there opening weekend, and he absolutely loved it. And Randall was a guy that was playing. He was playing Betfair on the exchange wager. You know, when in the early Wild West days of internet play. So Randall is gung ho about that, big time. I love it. So he says thumbs up. He gave it the tacit approval. He said he got, you know, almost twice on one horse. In fact, it may have been the one that they use, that they cited in the example. Was it that Golden something, right? Golden Grant? Golden Grant was the one that, yeah, Golden Grant. It was the horse that dropped on the Parimutuel, but was able to be booked as high as 7-1 in the market. So ultimately went off at 7-2. So there, you know, there's a snapshot. There's lots of work to be done. Dallas will update us on that. I told you, Brad Free later. He's on the backstretch this morning at Santa Anita. There's a lot going on at Santa Anita. I told you about the Rainbow Force. There's all kinds of Memorial Day activity. They've got an infield carnival all weekend. The Shoemaker, there's a big giveaway. They've got a Memorial Day and veteran charity that is being featured all weekend. So lots going on there. Also want to slip in an opportunity to talk to Brandon Lee, Jazzman Brandon, at Lone Star Park. And Lone Star's got, you know, their big day Monday. That card is ready for you. The Steve Sexton Mile, the Ouija board, and I think six stakes all together. I posted it at Derby Trail last night. And in fact, here, I'll give you the Chamberlain Bridge, the Memorial Day Sprint. There's actually three sprints. The Spitestown, and then there's the bigger, those are all 100,000, and then there's the Ouija board for 200, the Sexton 400, and the Texas Derby 300,000. All right, and of course, Saturday at Santa Anita, the Gamely, they'll draw the Hollywood Gold Cup and the Shoemaker. Big. So it's going to be a wonderful weekend. I remember, my God, I should look this up, although I don't know if it'll still be on Derby Trail. It's that old. It may actually go back to even before I launched the website. But there was one Memorial Day where I said, I'm going to handicap every single stake race from whether it was Saturday, Sunday, Monday, or Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but whatever it was. And I think there were like, I don't know, there were like 38, 43 stakes that weekend. And I forget the stats about what kind of numbers I was able to put up, but it was like a dance marathon. So, and was I Chris Sarazen? I don't know. Mentioning an actor, the thing with Leota, very sad. Wasn't the saddest thing of the week, obviously, but boy, you know, who among us didn't love Ray Liotta? And I pushed Dominic and Eugene, if you've never seen it. It's really good with Tom Hulce. So, very, very sad. A couple of result newses, as it were, before Chris Hyde joins us, and that's in the wrong place. Let me mention to Churchill yesterday that Le Bon Temps that we brought up with Norm Cassie, the Leia Ban. Boy, the more his horses hit the racetrack, and you know that's a story. I got to write that down. That's a story we have got to visit with insurance people because, of course, there's a very nasty situation involved there. But Le Bon Temps out of the Tapizar mare, and this a Southern Equine bred, and a winner at first asking. And in fact, the other horse that came up, Toehead, with Mike Maker, they ran 1-2, and they were separated by a neck. It was a good effort, going 5 in the fillies. So Tooth's Great House and partners. So that was notable. You know, 40 cents, or make that 80 cents, 4-5 on Le Bon Temps. I can't say Le Bon Temps rolled because it was a neck victory. At Canterbury yesterday, I got to mention this. You know, the low takeout project at Canterbury continues to just, you know, just invite attention. And your betting dollars. The pick five yesterday, it was quite something. Now, you had to be on your toes in the fifth race to start the pick five. Okay, you had an 8-1 shot. Justice Warrior, a Drill Gelding for Lynn Rarick. And the gelding wired the field. So if you saw that, that was the hardest thing you needed to come up with, the toughest selection. Because after that, you had a 2-1 winner, second choice, and then 3 straight favorites. Yeah. $18, $6.20, $6.20, $6, and $5.20. Lynn Rarick again to end the sequence. What? I didn't do the parlay, but eight. 48, 24, 6, 25, well, 150, 75 times 5. This thing paid at least 2.5-3 times the parlay. $1,346. $1,346 for 3 favorites, a very close second choice, and then 1 tricky horse that had clearly the potential to wire a maiden turf group. Justice Warrior, unbelievable. It's out there. That's the point, right? I told you about Pimlico got hit, and even that, even the Pimlico sequence was not ridiculous. It wasn't like it was all, you know, 20-1 shots that took that down. So there's a quick glance ahead. Delaware, I've got to mention this. Delaware has had a very nice start to the meet. They did another $2.2 million yesterday. Nice start for the Delaware season. All right. So let's sidle that away. Case, let's get Chris Hyde in here for just a quick couple of minutes. And we will then get the order of business going. And here, take that if you need it. There you go. Oh, good. All right. One of the other things that we lost when Casey lost that computer, when the burnout was the. All the phone numbers. So he's kind of reassembling. Those of you that are iPhone savvy, there must be a way for me to send Casey my whole Rolodex, right? Can you export your whole address book? You must be able to. You can send it to right? All right, all right, Case, that's today's. That'll be today's project. I'll send you that later. The project that we're gung-ho about, of course, is getting the SAFE Act safely through Congress. Step one yesterday, the House subcommittee that was going to listen to, what do you call them, Chris? Those are statements or things that are read into the record?
Yeah, they accepted public testimony yesterday from people that they invited to talk on each of the bills. They had, ten or 11 different bills, I believe. Two horse bills were under consideration yesterday. So it was a good day for us.
Talk about how it went. I'm sure there's a few people that did tune in to the feed that we sent out the link to. But for those that did not, talk about what we heard and what it offers going forward.
Yeah, no, it went very well, and I think that was our hope, is that all of the feedback that we had gotten from the committee, that this was really one of the non-controversial bills. All of the bills were fairly non-controversial. There were a couple that had, a little bit of debate on both sides. But the horse issues, the bill to ban horse slaughter, the SAFE Act, and the PAST Act, which will crack down further on the soaring of horses in the Tennessee walking horse industry. One person spoke on both of those, somebody from the ASPCA represented on both of those issues. And again, it was really non-controversial, thankfully, which is what we expected. Several nice statements from a couple of the members, the sponsor of the bill, Jan Schakowsky, the congresswoman from Illinois. She was the chair of the subcommittee, so it was, good to have that bill in her subcommittee. The chairman, Frank Pallone, talked about Monmouth Park and his district and how horses are very important to him, the state of New Jersey. So he was very receptive to the issue as well. Really the only negative thing that came up, and this is unfortunately keeps coming up year after year, and there's really no substance to it, is that the ranking member, Cynthia McMorris Rogers from, I believe, Washington State, submitted a letter from a tribe in her state. And this tribe has been pro-slaughter for some years. They kind of come out and they claim they, don't know what to do with all their horses, and, oh, gosh, they need slaughter, and, we can't ban slaughter. And, so they sent a letter, and it was entered into the record, but really there was no further delving into that issue because the tribal issue's been dismissed. They're not sending their horses to slaughter right now, which is still perfectly legal, so why aren't they doing it if it's so critical to them to do? We've heard it's pretty much just a guy that wants to be a killer buyer. He wants to buy horses for slaughter. He kind of wants to make a name for himself in the horse slaughter business, gets the tribes, at least some of the individuals in one of the tribes, stirred up about the issue. So hopefully that will be a non-issue ultimately down the road. It has been in the past because there's many more tribes that we get that speak against horse slaughter that are working with groups to try to, if they do have horse issues and too many horses, that, we'll work with them to try to address it. So the hearing went well, very quick, and now it's kind of the next real step, and this is the critical thing, because we had a hearing like this 2 years ago, is that we need to get the committee, full committee now, this was the subcommittee, we need to get the full committee to do what's called a markup. And that's pretty much what they did now, but there will be no testimony. The bills just kind of come up. The members debate them. They'll offer any amendments that they want to make to any of the bills that are on the schedule, and then they vote on the bill and discharge it from committee, and then it goes to the floor. And we didn't get this last time. We have had it before, but we didn't get it last time. So that's why it's so critical, that we kind of use the success and the momentum from yesterday's hearing to really just kind of pivot and say, okay, great, you did it. It was non-controversial. Let's get this thing done. Let's get a markup in the full committee and get it to the House floor so then we can get a vote on it as quick as possible, because we really have to move this thing. Time is of the essence in this Congress.
All right, so from here, the next steps, and what do those of us that are interested, what do we have to do here literally over the next period of time as the thing goes forward?
Yeah, I think now, like I said, I think now is just to use this momentum, and we'll have alerts out from returntofreedom.org that you can go on. It's basically just pivoting to now messaging the full committee and to continue to reach out to Chairman Pallone to schedule this thing for a markup. That's really the urgent thing, is to get it out of the committee, and we have to do that right now.
All right. Well, at what point, literally in terms of days and the process, beside watching, ABC Schoolhouse Rock, what do we do to, when can we expect that next step?
Yeah, I wish it were Schoolhouse Rock. I used to post that on a website to show you that it's not quite like that when everybody sings. But yeah, no, I think they're in recess, I believe, for the week, for Memorial Day week, you know, that they'll be back in the districts and still doing meetings in the districts. So if anybody goes or sees their member of Congress, you know, continue to bring this thing up. But it can happen immediately because they do these markups fairly regularly where they'll bring a bunch of bills that have been considered. You know, they usually try to do that. They'll schedule a whole bunch so they can just, you know, go down the line and knock them off. But that can happen at any time. And I think, as I mentioned last time on the call or the previous time, we only have about, and I'm just guessing here, I think it's about 40 days of legislative time left in this entire year. So between the end of May and the end of December, about 40 days that they're going to be able to work on legislation. And that means we have to get it out of the House immediately. You know, it's just because the Senate is going to be even a more difficult task because their process is not the same. They are much more dragged out. They'll drag things out. They don't move as bills as fast. So it can happen at any time. We just really need to get that message to the chairman to put it on the next markup that the full committee has. And that can happen the week after next, you know, within the next 3 weeks, but it can happen at any time because they're out then for the month of August. They take the month of August off for summer recess. So that whole month will be gone. So we have time in June to get this thing done. And then when they come back from August, you know, then the sprint to the finish line is to get this thing done because we're running out of time.
Very good. All right. Well, we'll touch base next week and keep sending me, and you know, just keep sending me the alerts and the specifics, Chris, and we'll keep it out there.
Absolutely, yeah, and we'll have everything updated on returntofreedom.org for taking alerts and all the things that you mentioned, writing op-eds, that's all still critical. We'll have that updated, but we just need to keep the push on, and I'll keep you updated. I appreciate you having me on.
Not at all. Chris Hyde, everybody, and Animal Lobbyists on Twitter, returntofreedom.org, returntofreedom on Twitter, and the hashtag #YesToSafe as we shepherd the SAFE Act, ideally, through Congress and put a permanent end to slaughter. How about somebody who's aspiring to make a name for himself in the kill buying community? That there's something to aspire to.
Yeah, he's been an interesting guy over the years. It's kind of sad that this is the effort that he's made to do it. But you know, he's gotten a lot of attention. I think a lot of people like that. It's given him a niche to make something for himself. And it's, you know, I don't even like mentioning his name because it's not worth it. But, you know, because we got the facts on our side, and that's what we'll do. We're just going to keep pushing forward. We're close. Got to keep going.
Chris Hyde, everybody. Chris, thanks again.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
Not at all. Chris Hyde. There you go. We'll start doing some handicapping, and we've got Scott Shapiro that's going to join us next. We've got Brandon Lee and Hammer and Jimmy Gluckson, Scully, Dallas Baker, Nick Tamaro, and Brad Free. To talk about everything going on this weekend. So I put that on the side. While we wait for Scott, let me offer you the latest in the ping-ponging series of letters between the Texas Racing Commission and HISA. Virginia Fields, the general counsel to Texas Racing Commission, answered Lisa Lazarus's note with further clarification. I retweeted this last night, and essentially the Texas Racing Commission laid out one of the codes in the occupational, you know, occupational element that, you know, the codified portion of the Texas Racing Act, and they really are clearly stressing the commission shall regulate and supervise each race meeting in this state that involves wagering on the result of horse racing or greyhound racing. Each person and thing relating to the operation of a race meeting is subject to regulation and supervision by the committee. And what clearly what you know, to try to boil this down, and you know, Alan was fabulous yesterday, and I know a lot of people appreciated Alan Foreman's, addressing the conversation between, you know, I can't say it's between. There's what Heisa is presenting and their retort to Amy Cook and the Texas Racing Commission, and now Texas Racing Commission's response. What they're saying is, if Heisa is going to regulate, quote unquote, or intercede as a regulator, then Texas's, you know, they're basically violating Texas's state law. And that, I mean, that to boil it down to one line, I guess that's it. So we'll see how Heisa responds to this letter. Scott Shapiro isn't worried about this. He's worried about what's going on at Churchill Downs this afternoon, and then tomorrow, and through Memorial Day weekend. Chap, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you today?
I'm great. It's been a fun week overall.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, excited for the next 4 days of racing here. The long week with the holiday. I think today's pretty solid, although we are off the turf, if people haven't heard yet. And should be back, I would think, tomorrow. Doesn't look like too much rain today. And I think tomorrow's maybe the most fun and most bettable card since Derby. So very excited for it.
I agree. And three races today off the turf, the second, the fifth, and the eighth. And as it happens, that fifth will be okay. That's a 30-non-2 because there's three MTOs. So 10-horse field starting out. And that race, you got to figure the first leg of the pick five will maybe stay intact. No, it's one MTO in the eighth, no MTOs in the second. But it might be all right. Might hold together. Anything for today before we dive into tomorrow?
Yeah, for today was race seven, maiden special weight event for fillies and mares, two turns. And I like number three, Catch Magic, in here. This is, Norm Cassie's been red hot to start the meet here. And this daughter of Curlin, clearly bred to go two turns, debuted at Fairgrounds on that Louisiana Derby Day card. The opener was a 6-furlong sprint, and she drew the inside, got out of the gates okay, was caught in tight, ran into a couple good-looking horses in there, and was just outrun. But now freshened up, back on Norm's home turf here, stretching out the two turns, gets blinkers, 9-2 on the line. I think Adam Vasquez should get her out of the gate. I think she should be tough to catch. Hopefully other horses like Five Prizes, Dance It for some big connections, take some money. And I think number 11, She's Keen, is a use with Catch Magic. 10-1 on the line. Rusty Arnold doing everything right these days. Third start, first time going two turns. I thought the last effort was pretty solid. Fourth place effort on the one-turn mile. Needs to get out of the gate better, but so I'll be playing the three and hopefully try to get the 11 into the mix.
Very good. Catch Magic, the three and the seventh today. 3:50 post, the maiden special going a mile and a 16th. And then the 10-1.
Yeah, that's one of we've got our Bet Back promotion back. We started the Thursday leaderboard competition yesterday. That's not a ongoing contest like the Derby leaderboard one. That's just a weekly one, so that's on Twilight Thursdays now, so you can opt into that and get involved starting next week. And then we have the Bet Back promotion for all the other days of the week here. Get up to $10 back on your win bet if your horse finishes second or third. And the eligible races today are 5, 7, and 9, so that seventh race is one of the Bet Back promotion races.
And I'll also mention the first again today, watching the Justify. This will be the second Justify baby for Michael Huey, and a colt that he bred out of the Borrego mare Nina Fever. And he and partner Paul Thompson. From the inside, though, the two horse, Justa Fever, 5-2 with Santana, as we'll see if Justify offspring can win every race they run in.
Yeah, half the nickname, too, the damn Nina Fever produced nickname, who won the 2015 Frisette with fourth on debut. earned 557,000 for one Steve Asmussen.
There's also on Monday, the third one I mentioned the other. Yeah, was that yesterday I mentioned this? There's a Jim Chapman's got one, the Three Chimneys Bred. Prove right in the fourth at Indy on Monday. All right, let's turn to Saturday, Shap, and this really is a good card. Nick Tamaro later to look at the cross country, which features three of these races, the Kirtana and that allowance, as well as the maiden special that is the first leg, and then two races in New York, but go wherever you feel like it.
Okay, we'll start with race four, assuming we'll be back on the turf. It's a $141,000 high-level optional claiming event, 5.5 furlongs. And I think there's a lot of speed in here, which could set things up for surveillance. 8-1 on the morning line, gets back to the turf. Has run probably better overall on the dirt. And the last couple of starts have been real good, including fourth place finish at Big Odds and the Commonwealth over the sloppy going at Keeneland. But does have the ability to run over turf, has a one of the his three career wins over turf. And I think if the pace is hot, James Graham will be sitting way towards the rear and hopefully he can come running late. I think the price is pretty fair at 8-1. And in there, totally boss returns. Very tough horse to figure out. As I mentioned, Rusty Arnold, you haven't followed Churchill of late. Winning a lot of races, to say the least, been red hot. He brings this one back. Only one start since the since September of 2020, and that was in the Mighty Bow last year, and it was basically a non-effort. So, tough read. Obviously, the Totally Boss has the best resume in the past, the back class. But I thought probably, you know, probably a use, not overly excited to fade, but I thought surveillance would provide much better value in there. So, 8-1 on surveillance in the fourth. And then we go to race seven, another one, assuming we're all back on the turf. And I've been impressed with number nine, Evan Singh, who won on debut at Fairgrounds for Alstall Jr., who had a lot of tough luck so far at the meet. Hasn't won yet, but 25 starts, 10 in-the-money finishes. So seems like a matter of time. And this one ran real well in that first start versus winners, first start two turns. That was on opening night. And Stitched set very slow fractions, 25-1 and 50-1. And this one sat a couple lengths off the lead, gave it a run, and was unable to get the Stitched. And not only was that effort good considering first try two turns and winners, but Stitch came back to win a stake race at Indiana or a Horseshoe Indianapolis on one of the Caesars races. So I think Evan Singh has a look of a good-looking runner, and he is 9-2 on the line in race seven as my play in there. And that kicks off the late pick five, which is very, very challenging and enjoyable. Not sure if you got to take a look. You got to take a look at those races yet or not?
I've got them. I've got them in front of me because of the three that are part of the cross country. So I do.
Right.
I do have them. I haven't given them a hard drill down.
Gotcha. Okay. Race eight. That's part of the cross country. Is that correct?
The eighth is kicks off the it's the first leg.
Right. Okay. I like War Campaign in here, the four horse, 6-1 on the line. Second time starter for Phil Sims. Ran pretty good second on debut, 6.5 furlongs at Keeneland. Sacred Samurai wired out the field that day. This one passed the rest of the field to finish second and definitely bred to go two turns, Steve. By declaration of war out of the damn flashy campaign, half the Flash of Mischief, who earned almost $500,000 both on sprinting and routing, and then a half the Royal Mesa, who's been a hard-knocking horse for these same connections, Phil Sims, the trainer, Jerry Nammy, the owner. And I thought it was interesting. That horse debuted also gone one turn, ran just okay that day, and then they stretched out like they're doing with this one, and he ran second. He's not a horse that's really won a ton of races, but he brings his game all the time. I just think War Campaign on the stretch out should take a big step forward, and I don't think there's any world beaters in here. I think Ridley's Major and Pioneering Spirit for Brown and Pletcher, respectively, they can win, but they've had their chances. 7 chances for Pioneering Spirit, 3 for Ridley's Major. So thought they might be worth playing against as the two morning line favorites. So War Campaign, the four horse in the eighth for me.
You know, the one thing about this race, Scott, that we should really just at least glot, at least touch on. There is not a lot of pace in here. In fact, you better go shop around for it, because I guess my Romeo Lima, who Margo has taken over, always happy that when the Lowe's send Steve, you know, nice horses. This was a $600,000 purchase, and came close at Gulfstream on the synthetic. At least showed some speed, and has at least been somewhat close to paces earlier on. I would at least be intrigued by some of the stretch outs here, and that Civics class, Carrie Frommer gave this one to Michelle Lovell, and I imagine this was a buyback for Carrie that she, you know, like maybe a pinhook. I haven't looked at the dollars and cents. Michelle's had a slow start to the meet, but I would think that one of these horses that are stretching out, and War Campaign is a candidate on that front, somebody's going to get to the front here and is going to have to be reeled in, because the ones that have run, you know, any number of times, they're laggards. I mean, they're horses that dawdle and then try to rally. So just a FYI on that.
No, good point. And just a couple other to point out to speak to your point. Unified Dreams did not get out of the gates well and was out sprinted. But that was, as you, like you mentioned, that was a one-turn race. And now Jordan Blair goes to Ray Gutierrez, who's a pretty strong gate jockey. Wouldn't be surprised if that one's more into the race. And Bright Prospector has been prominent. Not super fast, but has that tactical feet, speed. And, you know, on any metric, Thoroughgraph, Brisnet, took a big step forward on the move to the dirt last time. All the other starts had been over the all-weather at Turfway Park. So to run a career best first time over the main track, over the dirt, I thought was encouraging. Aussie Pride was very impressive winner in there. So another one that could be involved early.
Yeah, I just pulled up the time form pace projector, and it thinks that Scotland Yard should be forward. It's got touch code, actually. Yep, and Bright Prospector. There you go for McPeak, and it's got my Romeo Lima sort of sitting behind the speed, which might be a good option as well to approach this race.
Good,
interesting.
Good race
to
take
this
a
is
chance,
tough.
I think, against some of the morning line favorites in there who, like you said, not only have they had their chances, like I said, but you said their running style might not be conducive to the race shape the way it'll play out here. So good betting race for both the cross-country and the pick five, and then just individually as well. So looking forward to that one. The Kirtana, race 10, I'd like Stand Tall in here at 6-1. The first race off the bench was the grade 3 Modesty. Not only was that tougher competition, but I think this one wants a little longer. And maybe most importantly, she was on the inside that day. And normally you would think that's a great spot on the turf course, saving ground and waiting to angle out. But not that day. That was a day where the outside was definitely the place to be. And this one was along the inside against better on Bleecker Street, Fluffy Sock. I mean, these horses aren't at that level by any stretch that she faces today. And I don't think the mile and a half is an issue. Has run well here at Churchill, albeit on the old turf course. But 6-1, pretty square price. They're going to have to beat Temple City Terror, who won this race last year. But I thought that's it was right. A little bit interesting that she had three races under her belt coming into the Kirtana last year, Stephen, and just the one this year at the mile and the 16th. So not sure if that was by plan or what, but obviously a very capable 3-1 top choice.
Going to have to work out a trip, and I don't know if Chris Landeros can find a. I mean, it's a three turn race, and we'll see. I guess she's got to be used early. Undisturbed Outside has been getting better since Ian took over. Was sent to Ian from the West Coast, and little. little intrigued. Obviously put the line through the off-the-turf race at Gulfstream in January. Those two races were good, those two allowance tries. And Undisturbed, if you're looking for a price, I think is going to be the one to catch.
Yeah, I'm thinking Stand Tall and Disturbing Act will sit in that next tier, but yeah, they're going to have to catch Undisturbed. Definitely should be able to clear without any issue from the outside. And then the last play is in the finale. I think on the ones and twos, who is listed as the second choice, 7-2, we'll see. Ari Oakley got the big number out of that Oaklawn race. I wouldn't be surprised if on the ones and twos becomes the favorite. She ran really well over the slop in the Oaks Day post-Oaks race. The Winter Society ran real well, was just unable to run down. I thought on the ones and twos with a real good comeback effort. Likes it here at Churchill, draws well to the outside. And then I'm going to try to get number five, Pipeline Girl, into the number as well, 12-1 on the line. Both the win and another third-place effort came here at Churchill. Been freshened up since the March 24th optional claiming race at Oaklawn. And the top two out of that race, Parlance and Stanley Parker, both have won already at this meet. And two back at Fairgrounds, she lost to Matt Araya. So I think her form, you know, if you look at quick on the past performances, I think a little dirtied up. I think she's better than what we have seen of late. For Tom Amos, who's off to a real slow start, still looking for his first win, but usually his wins come in bunches, so I would expect them to start happening sooner rather than later.
The great Jerry Karum, one of Lake Hamilton's most storied residents at Oaklawn. Off a nice bullet, too, Pipeline Girl.
Yeah, very. I think this horse has a very significant chance of running well at a good price, because, like I said, I don't think the pass line, running lines do this one justice. She's got some talent.
Michael Pewich, who won one yesterday, Pewich has got maybe a sneaky developing filly in here. The Bally Calumet bred from Mark DiDomenico. Bally Dreamin', not so terrible. 6-1.
Yeah, ran well last time. I this is a big step up. Church Service, Sophie Grace, the ones behind her. Not quite what she faces today, but she did it well last time, and you like that he showed confidence. First in a $75,000 claimer, ran real well that day, and moved up and took advantage of the situation. So you should get every bit of that 6-1, if not more, I would suspect.
It's a very good sequence, and let's get that turf course dried out so we can use it and play. Anything else for the weekend?
I think that's it. I've got Sunday and Monday partially done, but got some more finishing up to do. One horse that's not necessarily a big bet, but I am looking forward to seeing on Sunday the return in race five of Love Me Some Me, a Tom Drury filly that was really good in two starts at Churchill last year, ran huge in a first-level allowance event and hasn't been seen, appears to be training very well. Probably going to be a significant favorite in the second-level allowance event for fillies and mares. But if she runs well, one to keep an eye on as she moves into the second half of her four-year-old season.
Nice. Love Me Some Me. Good job. And I for people that did not notice, I'm glad you mentioned Tommy Drury. And I did see yesterday that Drury has jumped aboard on Twitter. You can now follow.
Yeah.
Yes, you can follow. You can follow Drury, and you can give him all kinds of grief personally. Tom Drury Racing, and you know, I guess this will be a lot of fun. And I'm waiting for. Let me see. Has John Nichols done anything yet to? to put a burr under the Drury saddle. No, he hasn't. All right. We'll be waiting for some classic John Nichols, some of the great internet meme work that John is famous for.
I'm sure he'll do a good job. And, his social media advisor might be someone people are familiar with in Gary Palmisano Jr.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
this is going to be
sure
bad.
John will be diving in. I'm sure John will be poking the bear more than once or twice. So,
Well, and let's see. So right now, Drury, with 125 followers, Drury is trailing Gleishaw by about 4,600 followers. And so this is the key matchup, the Gleishaw-Drury
showdown.
Twitter war.
Yeah.
I love it.
Good stuff.
Chap. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. We'll be watching. You'll be on TV nonstop for the next 96 hours.
Oh, yeah. I'll be living here. I'm thinking about bringing a cot, but looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun and a lot of bettable sequences and individual races. So, and just remember for those promotions I mentioned on Twin Spires, the bet back and then the Thursday leaderboard, remember always to opt in. I know you always mention that, but we hate to see somebody new to it. Think they're getting involved. Just got to remember to go to the offers page, whether it's the website or the app, and click that opt-in button.
Outstanding. Scott Schapp, 34, everybody. And Schapp of the Kappa with us. And Twin Spires weekend preview rolls on. Thanks a lot, Scott. Have a great weekend.
You too, Steve. Have a good one, bud.
There it is. And we'll talk to Scully next hour. Right now, we're going to get Brandon Lee in here. I want to get spend at least 10 minutes with Brandon, because Monday, and we might be able to do some handicapping on, Monday's always fun. Nick Tamaro comes back, and we always do holiday Monday handicapping action, as well as recapping the first part of the weekend. But in addition to the handicapping portion, there's the contest on Monday. We talked to Brandon, when the meet was starting. Opening week of the meet, we talked. And they've got a very attractive contest on Monday at Lone Star. So I want Brandon to give one more push so that those that, if you don't have something locked in for Monday, and certainly a lot of you are within proximity, right, of Prairie Station. Get over to Lone Star. And let me pull the, what did I do with the, I know I printed it. For goodness sakes, where did I put the Lone Star PPs? Wow. You think this is easy? How about here, underneath the stakes calendar? There it is. Boom. Chamberlain Bridge, one of our favorites, right? I think we've got Brandon Lee now. Jazz man Brandon, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
I could not let the weekend preview go, even though, Monday we can probably do some handicapping of this really nice card, the Steve Sexton Mile, the Ouija board, much more, Texas Derby. But I got to give you a chance to push one more time, get some people signed up for the big contest on Monday.
Well, we're certainly excited, and we're expecting a great turnout. The weather in the Dallas-Fort Worth area is great. For those that remember, last year we had a horrible weather day on Memorial Day. We actually ended up going off the turf, and it was like a freaking monsoon. I think we had about an hour and a half rain delay. We were luckily able to just pull off getting the card, just going, but it was looking dicey there for a couple of hours. But this weekend, the weather is going to shape up great. We'll be on the turf, and we're expecting a big weekend. And obviously with the handicapping contest, things kick off beginning tomorrow, Saturday. So we've got we've got 3 days of tournament. They're all individual. We're giving NHC seats away all 3 days. So Saturday and Sunday, those tournaments are both a $750 buy-in, and the top two each day will get NHC seats, so you can collect NHC tour points both of those days. And then also 1 in 15 will get their $2,500 buy-in covered going into Monday. And that brings us to Monday, where we are doing a $2,500 buy-in and giving away 8 guaranteed NHC seats, plus $15,000 cash, plus a trophy, and hopefully just a good time for everybody.
Well, and this is one of the, as we talked at the beginning of the meet, this is one of the most attractive opportunities, and that includes the Saturday and Sunday, the play-ins, but one of the most attractive on-site opportunities out there. And you also, we should also mention, Brandon, I mean, you take care of the players and, you know, in terms of hosting and you know, the way in which everybody gets treated and the F&B and everything else. If you haven't been, and if you've never been to Lone Star, this is a unique opportunity. So Oklahoma, Louisiana, New Mexico, jump in the car. Let's go. Get over to Lone Star. And then, wait a minute, there's a phenomenal stakes card.
That's right. So Monday's card, we got 12 races on the card, and half of them are stakes. So six stakes worth $1.2 million. And I also just want to mention for everyone out there, the late pick four, which kicks off with the ninth, with the Spikestown Sprint, that's going to be a $200,000 guaranteed late pick four. So everybody, you know, handicap those last four races and get a piece of that action. But we're expecting a big pick four pool and just big pools all day long. And Steve, you're right about the hospitality. So all 3 days, anybody coming in for the tournament, you'll get complimentary valet, complimentary, you know, obviously we're going to be in the Ali Sheba tournament room, which is on the second level, has a balcony overlooking the track. You know, it's a great ballroom setup that we try to mirror a similar setup as the NHC as best we can. And then, you know, complimentary food and beverage. And so it's just, you know, we try to roll out the red carpet for our tournament players because obviously, you know, everybody wagering on Lone Star, we want to just show them the best hospitality we can and, you know, just show that appreciation for supporting good horse racing.
Well, and good horse racing will include the graded stake, the Grade 3 Steve Sexton Mile that closes out the sequence, the 12th, 8:35 Eastern. For those of you that want your Memorial Day weekend to last as long as possible, led here by Shaz, Sean McCarthy shows up. And how about Safi Joseph invading with Mish, Elector with for Sadler. Todd Fincher with Sheriff Brown caught my eye. And how about an appearance, at least what looks like a full complement or, you know, a couple of mounts throughout the day of Sonny Leone?
Yeah, we're kind of, you know, we'll see. Sonny Leone's going to have three mounts on the card. And we're actually, he's actually coming in a little early. And we're actually going to get an autograph session set up between 2 and 2:45 local time. And, you know, he was very, you know, I think he's riding that wave right now of obviously an unbelievable run that he went on a couple weeks ago.
To say the least. That wave is going to last the rest of his life. If he hasn't figured it out yet. Unbelievable. He's riding, let's see, he's riding for Mindy Wills in the 7th in the Chamberlain Bridge. And then later on the card, as just mentioned, he's riding Tesoro. And then he's got Fowler Blue for Doug O'Neill in the Texas Derby. So... pretty nice. That's nice that people get a chance to meet him. And, you know,
yeah, we're super excited. So
it's a nice. I'm just going up and down here. Rated our superstar for Villafranco with the Ray Lou. Nice 10 horse field in the Steve Sexton Texas Derby. Drew 8. AP Secret for Safi Joseph, a horse that was rumored to. And entered to run about 9 different stakes over the last 6 weeks since the Wood Memorial.
And AP Secret has arrived, so I'm confident that he actually is running in this one, and because he has arrived,
there you go.
On the backside of Lone Star now.
Well, and you know, 300,000. We should mention Texas Derby. You know, really kind of trying to, obviously, management trying to really bolster and get it back, you know, to an attractive level and try to get the attention of you know, of major outfits around the country, and you did get a nice field. It looks like, and I suppose AP Secret is probably the most accomplished.
The
pretty much.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, but you got Win the Day. Win the Day comes in for Doug O'Neill out of the Santa Anita Derby. Presidential for Asmussen has kind of regrouped after starting the season in the LeCompte. That King Ottoman of Asmussen's is still a maiden, but he ran into a couple of very tough horses, including Western River at Oaklawn, and then he ran into Congressman on the opening race of Derby Day. So this is a nice group. Matt Williams shows up with Strike Hard, who tried the Sam Davis and the Florida Derby. So this is a nice field. The Ouija board always gets a nice field. The mile turf race for the fillies and mares goes as the 10th. And then the set of three stakes. Turf stake, of course, the turf sprint, the Chamberlain Bridge, and Brett Calhoun with Excess Magic there. The Memorial Day sprint, Calypso for Asmussen, a 7-5 favorite, and in the Spitestown, Payne for Karamori, and Mr. Moneybags shows up in this spot too. So nice, really a nice sequence, Brandon.
Yeah, thanks. We're excited. 8.5 field size for the 6 stakes, and then that late pick 4's got an average field size of 9. So we think it's competitive, and don't forget, you know, Richard Balta's shipping in Cover Me Up in the Texas Derby too. I think he'll definitely be a contender.
And actually, we'll when Hammer joins us next, we'll talk about Baltus and that situation that is like a fish, like a goldfish that jumped out of the bowl. Unbelievable, Brandon. And one other thing that came up when we let Darren jump in with you at Churchill, that was fun. But he either reminded or speculated. He couldn't completely remember. But those that follow you, Jazzman, yeah. Brandon, obviously a musical background. He says he thought that you blew the trumpet at Lone Star for a period.
That is actually how I got my foot in the door. I was finishing up my degree, and kind of funny story. I'll try to keep it short. So I had a friend that bugled out at Lone Star, but it was just part-time. They only brought out the bugler on big days. And the mayor of Grand Prairie was out there one day, and there was no bugler, and he was offended. And he called management and said, we should have a bugler every day. My friend couldn't commit to the schedule. They called me, and I bugled that first season in 2006. And never in my wildest dreams thought that I would be having a career in horse racing. But a couple years later, I just started working my way up the marketing department, and here I am. So it's almost been 16 years. And it's been a great 16 years. But, yeah,
well,
I got my foot in the door being the bugler.
That is so great. Well, see, you know, there is merit to blowing your own horn.
There you go.
Brandon, I'm glad we got this in. Saturday and Sunday, $750 buy-ins, 2 NHC seats both days, plus, not to mention, 1 out of 15 buy-in tickets to Monday.
Yeah.
So
yep.
Make it happen, and then Monday.
Yeah, Monday's the big one, and I believe we are the only tournament in the whole country where you get that 1 in 10 shot. So Monday, we got 8 guaranteed, but as soon as we get to 90 entries, we'll give away a 9th spot. As soon as we get to 100 entries, we'll give away a 10th spot, and so on. So 1 in 10 odds to win an NHC seat on Monday. You're not going to find it anywhere else.
No, it's a tremendous ratio. So anybody within hitchhike distance of Grand Prairie, get out to Lone Star, follow Brandon, Jazzman Brandon, of course, on Twitter. And if they need to get in touch, if they got to mail you, email you, Brandon, how do they reach you?
Brandon, and that's Brandon.Lee, and that's LEIGH, at LoneStarPark.com.
There it is. Brandon Lee, everybody. Brandon, enjoy the weekend. Good luck to everybody playing at Lone Star Park this weekend, one of the biggest 3 days of contest play toward NHC in the country. Thanks, Brandon.
Thank you, Steve.
There you go. You're up to speed. Let's take a break. Hour two upon us. We got to jump back in and get Hammer in here. We got Scully. We got Jim Gluckson. We got Dallas Baker to update you on how the fixed odds wagering is progressing. Just five cards so far, but it's going to keep building momentum. And the big target on the horizon is Haskell Day, of course. So we'll check in with Dallas as well, and then Nick Tamaro and Brad Free later. Stay with us. Twin Spires weekend preview at the races continues. SiriusXM.
On SiriusXM Radio.